Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
She's alive, Daddy, and her name is Talkie Tina.
For heaven's sakes, Annabelle, a doll like that would cost...
I put it on the account.
Tina does everything. She moves, and she can talk, and I just love her already.
My name is Talkie Tina, and I love you very much.
It's a living thing. It's a terrible thing to lose. It's a given thing. What a terrible thing to lose.
My name is Talkie Tina. And I'm beginning to hate you.
My name is Eric Strader, and I'm going to get rid of you.
You wouldn't dare.
Oh?
Wouldn't I?
Annabelle would hate you, Christy would hate you, and I would hate you.
I'm one of the most notorious slashers in history, and I don't want to give that up. I am Chucky, the killer doll!
On the stage is only one show away to bring the giant down. Deep on the screams, cemetery things. We're the ones that put on the devil's wings.
Click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and we are at Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn, and I'm here with my co-host, Robert, and Bobby, and unfortunately, Dave is not with us today, but hopefully he'll be with us on the next show. Today, our show is called, or the episode is called, Talkie Tina. It's called Living Doll. Should be called Talkie Tina. It's called Living Doll.
And, all right, Stavros packs out the lollipops, dear everybody. They need them today. Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby? Oh, and I also want to welcome our guest here today, Rick Wall. and guest number 5, and barman 54, and of course, Louie. And Louie's always here. Hi, everybody.
Hello there.
Hello.
Oh, my God, Ken.
Yes, barman 54 is Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi there. Hi, Lynn. Hi, Robert.
Wait, who's Ken?
From
Ken Bar.
Collective. Cuddly Ken. We know Cuddly Ken.
Oh,
called him. Hi.
Hi.
Been wanting to join you guys, and it turns around. I go, oh, rats, it's Saturday. I forget, and I check, and I go, oh, okay, great.
Oh, well,
you picked a good
great.
Point to come in.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
Because you definitely talk about my favorite TV show, I would say, of all time.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad you're here.
Glad to be
Thanks
here.
For coming, Ken. Well, okay, well, today, by the way, before we get started, I do want to wish a happy birthday to Robert. It was a few days ago, but I just wanted to take the time to wish him a happy birthday.
Happy belated birthday.
Happy birthday, Robert.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
And Bobby's birthday was April 25th, so we're a couple of weeks from his, but he was April 25th, so happy birthday, Bobby.
Thank you.
Hey, Bobby, I'm more of a fool than you are. I'm the 6th.
Really? Your birthday was the 6th?
Yep.
Happy birthday, Rick. Woo!
Thank you.
Everybody's
happy
birthday
Rick.
Today.
That was April 6th, by the way.
Oh, April 6th, okay.
Oh, well then.
That's why I said I'm more of a fool than Bobby is.
All
I'm
right, well,
first.
So it's a shame we can't push some tape through the computers here. I have to jerk over some. With all
That's
that
okay. I have some cake from a leftover party.
Yeah?
It's spice cake with...
Oh, I love that.
We have cream cheese, icing, and coconut on top.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I had a couple pieces earlier.
Oh.
I still got a few more I can eat.
Damn.
I like the whole thing except for the coconut. I don't know why. I never liked coconut.
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of people who don't like coconut, and I love coconut. I really do. But I know a lot of people who don't. I don't know if it's the texture of it or what it is, but I just really like it.
Anyway.
All right. Well.
You got to watch out that spice cake. It doesn't turn your eyes blue.
That's true. That
I could say something, but I'm not. Somebody else can turn your eyes blue. I won't say what it is. Anyway.
All right. Well,
hi-oh. Here's Johnny.
Hi-yo. Today we're talking about Living Doll.
Oh, yeah. I've got it. Here, take this down to the photo unit, have it blown up and put on the streets. And take this artwork with you.
Why bother? This, with Angelina's testimony, gives us probable cause. Why don't we just bring Salducci in and sweat him?
Because he'd be back on the streets in 5 minutes. Sweat, Tony, clamps. Are you kidding? Crocodiles, they don't have pores. And if I'm going to throw a net over him... Let me tell you something. It's going to be forever. Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling.
My name is Talkie Tina, and I don't think I like you.
Talkie Tina. The doll that does everything. A lifelike creation of plastic and springs and painted smile. To Eric Strater, she is a most unwelcome addition to his household. Without her, he'd never enter Twilight Zone.
Okay, this episode it's considered by many to be a classic episode. You have a young girl, her name's Christy, and her mother, Annabelle, she buys her, during a shopping trip, buys her a doll named Talkie Tina. And obviously, she's had her eye on this doll for a while. According to Annabelle, she really wants it. And you wind the key on her back, and the doll says, "My name is Talkie Tina, and I love you very much." Of course, you know, before I even get into my review or anything, one issue I have is that supposedly that's the only thing this doll is supposed to say to a normal person, you know, like to little Chrissy or anybody normal buying this doll. It says one thing. So I don't know how much at that time she paid for this doll, and, you know, Eric saying it was very expensive, but it says one thing. Why are you winding the thing? When I was a kid, dolls said 5 to 12 different things when you pull the string or wound it up. It says one thing. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that right now. But, you know, I mean, it's clear that there's tension in the house anyway. You know, she recently got Annabelle. She recently married Eric, so he became Christy's stepfather. And he obviously wasn't so crazy about getting a ready-made family. You know, he's a little hostile toward Christy. And she bought the doll, I guess, to keep Christy company, and Eric resents that, telling her that, oh, yeah, well, that's because we can't have any children, and, you know, you're rubbing it in and that sort of thing. But in any case, the doll doesn't like Eric. It doesn't like Eric at all because he was very hostile toward it. He didn't want her to have it. He said it cost too much money. He threw it across the room. And it just starts threatening Eric every chance it gets. My name is Talking Tina, and I don't think I like you. My name is Talking Tina, and I'm going to kill you. You know, so, you know, she was a little pissed off at him. And, you know,
slightly.
So, yeah, slightly. So,
just a tad.
So Annabelle, you know, she doesn't understand why he's so hostile. Eric checks out the doll. He decides that he wants to get rid of it because he doesn't like the things that it says to him. So he takes the doll. He tries to get rid of it. He tries to saw its head off to no avail because the head cannot be. I mean, you know, this is an evil type of doll. I don't know if it's evil or not. It's just the doll doesn't want to be pissed off. So he couldn't get the head off of it, and he tried to put it in the trash can. He tried to cover the trash can. It still got out. So eventually Annabelle has had enough. She's had enough. She decides she's going to leave him. And Eric's whatever soft side he has, how little it is, comes out. And he says, I'll do whatever you want. I'll give her back the doll. Don't leave me. Blah, 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 blah. And he gives her back the doll. But even that wasn't enough. Talkie Tina was still mad. You know, she doesn't forgive so easily. So he's asleep one night with the... by the way, that was back then when they slept in separate beds, right? So they're asleep one night in their beds, and he hears like this winding sound, and you know, just a churning type of sound. And he gets up to see what it is, and he goes to steps, and well, what happens is he steps on Talkie Tina, falls down the steps, and breaks his neck. So she got her revenge. She said she was going to kill him. And she did. And so, of course, Annabelle, she comes to the steps. Eric! You know, she screams, you know, runs down after him. He's laying down there. And Talkie Tina's right next to him. And she realizes he's dead. And she looks at the doll. And the doll says, my name is Talkie Tina. And you'd better be nice to me. And she drops the doll in shock. And that's the end. So, Talkie Tina was not a doll to be reckoned with. I'll tell you, she was not a happy doll, you know. And she was nice to Christy, of course. You know, Christy loved her, but well, I don't know.
Till Christy says something.
Until Christy says something.
See, the thing is, I think that doesn't give anybody a chance to relent. It's not just survival; it's survival on Tina's terms.
That's
only.
Right. Yeah, because if Christy one day gets another doll and decides to talk Tina's side, well, not only will she kill the other doll, but she'll kill Christy. Yeah. I mean, she's not a nice doll. She's really not. And she wasn't happy. She wasn't. But see, I couldn't understand why she threatened. I didn't know why she threatened Annabelle.
Oh, I don't see it as a threat. I think that's. I think
it was a warning.
I think that's
right?
That's the priceless moment of the episode, because previously, like Nightmare in 20,000 Feet, everybody thinks Eric's crazy. Everybody thinks it's all in his mind. Why is he acting so irrationally? What is he doing to this doll? He's saying this doll is talking and everything. That's the moment. It's like, okay, I've set foothold now. This is my family. You know, you belong to me on my terms, and you saw what I did to him. Now,
I'll do the same
thing
to you.
Yeah, we're okay now. And are we going to stay that way? And that's just like, oh, my God.
And because you know, if you look at it, Annabelle was her ally.
Yeah.
You know, Annabelle was Christy's ally and her ally. And, you know, you're saying, you know, I'm going to leave you if you don't give back the doll and treat the doll right and treat Christy right. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, fine, you know, you were my ally, but you screw with me. You better be nice or you're next, you know.
Well, and, you know, it could have been worse. It could have been that one person.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Not your friend to the end. I know.
Little competition there in the household.
Yeah,
little fan fiction there, right? Annabelle gets Chucky as a doll, and all of a sudden they both go at it. But it's a doll's life, right? Is that what you're saying?
It is. It's a doll's life. You know, I mean, most stepfathers and stepmothers, what do? They try to gain the love of their new stepkids with kindness and understanding. And if all else fails, a new doll or a football or something doesn't hurt. Eric Streeter doesn't want to use any of these tactics. He doesn't seem to care one bit about Tina. He despises the doll, and I'm not even sure why she married him. Because, I mean, I don't care what anybody says. You can't be that different. You can't be that different. You know, somebody would say, well, while they were dating, you know, while they were going out, you know, he might may have been a different person. Come on. Come on. I mean, he was a bad...
No, she had the blinders on.
Yeah, she had to, because maybe she wanted somebody to help raise the kid. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was a bastard. You cannot be that nice.
Or he was sweet in the beginning, and then after the wedding vows, he showed his true colors.
That's right, and it was too late at that point. Well, I mean, she was going to leave him anyway, but, you know, it's just ridiculous.
But he still tries to relent. He still tries to be at least a bit conciliatory.
When?
Well, at the end, and I feel sorry for him, because it's like, I mean, you know, it's not liking a doll is one thing, but to him and to the aspect of human being, it's a damn doll, and it's going to kill him, and saying it's going to kill him.
Yeah.
But it comes down to, is talking Tina a evil persona of an abused child, or is the doll a protector?
Yeah.
Interesting.
The answer is yes.
To both or to one?
You think she was a protector?
or the spirit of a abused kid. Take your pick.
Yeah.
Either fits.
Yeah. But that's not referenced about you hurt me like someone else did. That would have been some shadings there. Like, you're not going to... And then there would have been the...
Yeah, but Rod wouldn't be that obvious.
No, he might have had some things about them fighting and saying, leave her alone. You have to watch your temper. There would have been something. There would have been some inkling if there was some threat of violence or some attitude toward the child.
This is 1963 we're talking about.
You can still get to that.
And wouldn't get past the censors, Ken, at that point.
Yeah,
so.
You know what a scrapper
Rod
is.
Yeah, back in 1963, you could still slap your child and spank him in public and not get arrested. Remember that? I mean, come on, you all remember that. I mean, back in the 50s and 60s, you could put your kid over your knee and you could take a belt and smack him, and the cops didn't come and arrest you. That was your kid. That was your business. I mean, I watched the Andy Griffith show, and Andy Griffith tells a father, you know, there's an old woodshed in the back, and you can get a switch and a good old-fashioned woodshed, and you can smack your, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, well, back then they could do it because that was their kid and that was their punishment.
Yeah.
And, you know, nowadays you do so much as slap your kid across the behind once and the cops are coming.
Everybody remember the bad seed?
Oh, yeah, I was thinking of that.
Oh, yeah.
But when they break the fourth wall at the end, that terrible ending where they go, it's okay, and they spank her.
Yeah, I think they just, because they also put a little disclaimer, well, we don't like, you know, we're, I don't know what they said, but it's kind of like, we're not condoning this ending, but, you know, it was like this weird, we're sorry that we killed the kid kind of ending. And then
yeah, it was like having it both ways.
Tag ending, yeah.
Yeah.
I give this episode a 5, you know, because, I mean, Eric wasn't the nicest guy in the world. I will say one thing. I don't know if he should have been, he was a bit of a creep. But I don't think he should have been tormented the way he was. I mean, I don't think the Doll should have threatened to kill him and that kind of thing. I don't think he deserved that. He was just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Well, Lynn,
you know?
I see, the thing that gets me, I don't see it toward a abused child, and that it's protecting own self-interest. And I see a sense of, if not evil, but potential malevolence. If it was more of a protector, then for the whole good of this family, when Eric at least was trying to be conciliatory, she should have said, I'm talking Tina, and I'll forgive you for the moment. That would have been the best for the little girl. That would have been the best for the family, you know. But it's like you cross her, and that's even the threatening attitude at the end. It's, there's something, like a doll should not have a consciousness like this. And
yes,
also
and,
only
and the
say
feeling
one,
of control.
And only be able to say one thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing,
all,
too.
Yes.
Is this episode written by Beaumont or Searle?
Yeah, it is.
It's Beaumont.
It's
listed as Beaumont, but then it says that there's another author.
Well, yeah, because at that point, I think he was having some ghostwriters. I think he was very, very ill at that point.
Yeah.
And he was having ghostwriters.
I've got to say something about Savalas, who I never liked in Kojak. I mean, that's just a personal thing. What an amazing actor.
Oh,
in
yeah.
In his early 60s, and then in things like Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and this amazing little movie he did with Oliver Reed and Diana Rigg called The Assassination Bureau. If no one's seen that, it's kind of like The Great Race. It's a assembly of assassins. They take care of all the ills of the world, and Diana Rigg is wonderful. It's 1968 circa, and he's just as amazing as he is as Blofeld in Honor, Majesty's Secret Service. But he has such a neat intensity, and just
he absolutely does in just about every role he has.
Yeah,
he really does.
I mean, I could say him and Klugman are just such a joy to watch in that 60s prime of them.
Huckman was awesome.
Yeah.
Huckman was awesome. Bobby, you want to weigh in on this?
It's obviously a classic episode. I'm not going to state the obvious. It's been a very, very long time, actually, and dating back to the first season and time enough at last that we have seen a part that was ready-made for a particular actor. And certainly Tali Savalas was born to play this part. It would have been a good story anyway, but it's special because he's in it. I don't think the episode is about the doll or about what it might do or might not do. It's about his belligerent attitude towards everybody. And that's what makes the story different. I always was a huge fan of Tali Savalas because I think he was different than everybody else. I like actors who not only can act, but do things that other people don't do. And when you look at them, you just know you're seeing somebody special. I saw him for the first time in the early 60s when he was in the opposite of Burt Lancaster in The Birdman of Alcatraz.
Birdman of Alcatraz. Oh, God, yeah.
And he won an Academy Award nomination for that, even though the part is fairly small and it's hard to top Burt Lancaster in anything. But that was the first time I ever saw him. And he has the right kind of belligerent, nasty, kick-ass attitude that this kind of story needs. There's no question about that. And to me, that's what makes the story. I mean, it's basically just a horror story. And since then, of course, we've seen all kinds of things like it, like Chucky and other things. And so I'm not a fan of horror stories. But I will say this. I think it works, at least for me, because it doesn't do the obvious thing, which is to have a doll wielding a knife or an axe or something like that and going after people. It's more subtle, and that's what it needs to be, because it's scarier when it's subtle, because you don't know whether the doll is going to say something nice to you or kill you, and that's what makes the difference. A few odds and ends that I found on the internet when I was looking, as I do with everything. Actually, this was, as has already been mentioned, was not written by Charles Beaumont because he was pretty much out of his mind by that time. It does say here, I did find something about how he was friends, Jerry Saul, that's the guy who really wrote the episode and gets no credit for it all, but Jerry Saul had a career as a ghostwriter, so he made a lot of money, and it just seems a shame to me that a person who writes an episode like this doesn't get any screen credit.
I think Beaumont had the general idea, and then Jerry Saul wrote
I was going to get to that. They were friends, two of them, and one day they were actually walking along somewhere, and one said to the other one, they came up with the idea. This is a quote. Jerry Saul says, "Chuck Beaumont and I were walking along and saying, suppose we had a doll that talked and could answer our questions and reprimand us. Just think of all the things a doll could do. It turned out very well," end of quote. And big things come from small things sometimes. They're just walking along and going, well, let's think of a story. Well, that would be a pretty good idea. But I think it's one thing to write a story, and the actors that make it come to life on the screen, and that's where the difference is for me in this episode. By the way, that doll used in the episode is not a stage prop, but a real doll. I found this. It was made by the Vogue Doll Company, which is still around at almost 100 years old.
What's it called?
The name of the doll was Briquette, B-R-I-K-E-T-T-E. A real
Briquette doll.
It didn't talk, but it was a real doll. What surprises me about this is that I would not think that a company would want its product that's on the market to be in an episode like this, to scare people with a doll. I can't believe that they even did that. Today, where companies are agonized over every bit of bad publicity they get, it's amazing that they went ahead and let them use their doll, because I would think that a parent might say, no, I'm not going to get my daughter that doll. Did you see that Twilight Zone episode? The doll kills people. But apparently it didn't bother them, which is quite amazing. I want to get back again to Telly Savalas being in this episode and adding so much to it. Every now and then, the other episodes of The Twilight Zone that benefited from that, of course, Time Enough at Last, because there's just nobody but Burgess Meredith who should have been in that. And the other episode in the series that I think benefits from that is The Invaders, because Agnes Moorehead, aside from doing a great job, simply looks the part. She simply fits in it very well. Those are the three episodes that I think benefit by the actor in it even more than the story. Now, a few weeks ago, Lynn and I were watching TV, and of course, Forrest Gump is on for the 9 millionth time. I like to go to the Internet Movie Database because there's lots of trivia there, and they tell you things you don't know. And it's especially interesting to see the actors that were supposed to play parts who turned it down. It's quite remarkable. You see that all the time. And in Forrest Gump, you look at Tom Hanks and you say, sure, Tom Hanks is Forrest Gump. Of course, how could it be anybody else? But they did not ask him first to be in the movie. They wanted Bill Murray to be in Forrest Gump. And to me, that just turns it into a comedy. They asked John Travolta to be Forrest Gump.
Oh, my God.
But most of all, they wanted Chevy Chase to be Forrest
Gump. Watch. I cannot stand Chevy Chase. I'm sorry. I can't.
I like fried shrimp, almond shrimp, coconut shrimp.
they all turned the part down, and so they went to Tom Hanks, who read the script for an hour and a half and said yes. He agreed to do it only if he didn't get paid for it. He didn't want to get paid. He took a percentage of the profits, and it made him $40 million. $40 million to make a movie. So sometimes you make the right decision. That was a risk, but I mean, he fought so much of it that he decided to do it that way.
I could never see either John Travolta or Chevy Chase. I would never even watch it. I cannot stand that guy.
Well, it's hard to say what they had in mind, whether they were really interested in doing a comedy or they wanted to do a comedy drama. It's really hard to say. I mean, there are some amusing parts in the movie, but basically it's not a comedy. And they turned it down. John Travolta was quoted afterwards as saying it's the biggest mistake he ever made, obviously.
I can't even see John Travolta doing like this.
Well, I can see Travolta giving it a shot.
Yeah, but you know, he had that way of talking.
Well, what I can see is Bill Murray, because that's just a comedy. That's ridiculous.
But Travolta would have had to have that way of talking. He couldn't talk like, I can't say it.
See, well, I would see him more in Pulp Fiction than he was in than in Forrest Gump. I mean, a mobster, that was a good role for Travolta.
Yeah.
I can see him as Forrest Gump.
I can't see him. Life is like a box of chocolates. I mean, I just can't see him do it. Life is like a box of chocolates. You know, I just...
And,
Bill Murray can be slightly serious-looking Groundhog's Day, but no way he's near that part of in a million years.
Oh, my God.
So that's, to me, that's what really sets this episode apart from other things. And like I said... It's better this way, more subtle. I would have hated it if a doll had gone after everybody. I'm just not a fan of horror movies like that. This is outstanding. It is, of course, the last great moment for the Twilight Zone. And at IMDb, it gets an 8.9 rating, the same as Nightmare 20,000 Feet. And that's really heady territory because The Godfather gets 9.2, so you don't expect a TV episode to be near a classic movie. Telly Savalas, I really miss him a lot. I think he was outstanding. And Kojak, I mean, I'm not a great fan of detective shows, but I turned it on now and then just to see him more than anybody else. And this is the last one. I would have preferred, if I had it my way, that this episode would have been the last of the series. It would have been a nice to go out on the highest note imaginable.
Yeah,
but
I agree with that.
It is about halfway through the last season, so it's probably close enough. And it'll just, it'll never be like this again. There are some decent episodes coming up, it is true. But this is basically it. And it's just, it's a shame whenever you look up things, Charles Beaumont, the way he ended up. It's just a real tragedy. But what I couldn't find was whether the original story was really his idea. They seem to have come up with it together. And they were just kicking ideas around and said, let's get a killer doll. Today, of course, that's not a new idea. It's been done 10,000 times. But back in the early 60s, it was practically revolutionary. In my review on the board at the group, I said, I can't give it a rating. You can start at 5. You can put a 0 after that, or 2 zeros, or 3 zeros, or 5 zeros, because it's really off the charts as far as a rating. So it's just fabulous. And It is in my Twilight Zone top 3. That is for sure. All right, Lynn.
All right. So who else has something to say?
Me?
Yeah, Rick, go ahead.
Go ahead, Rick.
All right. Well, let's see. Where can I start? All right, the doll. Boy, that actress was nothing but a piece of plastic.
Kind of wooden, huh?
Very wooden,
Very wooden acting,
They could have got a better actress for that part.
And they used a grown woman for the voice, so. June Foray, wasn't it? Was it June Foray?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And, Savalas, he was the worst that... No, I can't do it. I had this whole plan that I was going to rag on it all, and then at the end I was going to say I give it a 5. But I love this episode, and you know it reminds me. I think I mentioned this a few times on here and other places that I've been agonizing over a script on Harrow House called The Dog's Life. And it is amazing how much A Dog's Life is like this episode. It's slightly different. It's about
I never saw that movie, and I always wanted to see that movie.
Well, my Harrow House is different than 13 Harrow House. And unfortunately, it isn't running anywhere. Well, it's actually I have it online, but it isn't running anywhere yet. I'm in negotiations with Chiller to get it on.
Good.
But anyway, it's basically about an abused girl falling in love with a stray dog that turns out to be a ghost from Harrow House, or a demon, or something. That's one thing I'm agonizing over, trying to decide what the dog actually is.
Uh-huh.
But it's very protective over her and stuff like that, like Tina was.
As Tina was, yeah.
But the father is really more of a scum than Savalas was. Because he does abuse the kid. And you see, he doesn't hit her, but he's an artist. And she goes into his studio one day, and he goes, "Get the bleep out of here. Hey, I forget the wife's name. Come here and get this stupid brat out of here," and stuff like that. And, she goes running to her room, and then he goes up to do something to her, and the dog's there and chases him out of the room. And that's about all I got.
So, Rick, you're thinking about a dog. What about an unexpected dog? I mean, everybody uses pit bulls and German shepherds, but maybe like a chihuahua,
something you wouldn't suspect.
How about a Maltese? No one would ever expect a Maltese to attack anybody.
I was looking to have Daphne do it, but she gets so excited around people and stuff, she'd never, stay still enough for it. She'd probably jump the cameraman and lick him to death.
Probably would have, yeah.
I rated a 5. Like Robert said, this was one of the best things. Savalas, again, like a lot of people, I'm not a big fan of his acting, but he did a great job. His wife did a great job. The little girl, for what she did, she was a very good actress for her age.
Oh, yeah. She was she was also in that other episode. What was it? We just reviewed it. Little Girl Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't have much of a role. I mean, that wasn't even her voice either. Wasn't even her voice, but it was just all you see is a photograph of her, and then when she comes out of the wall, you see her mother carrying her away. But that was her. Yeah.
But kudos to that. And I think the ghostwriter, I don't believe he belonged to the Writers Guild. And back then in the early 60s, if you're not union, you don't get credited.
Ah, that's why some of them weren't credited.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. Good information.
You don't mind, I want to bring a little bit more about June Foray as well. As Rick said, she did a wonderful job. She did the voices of Rocky, the Flying Squirrel, Witch Hazel.
Wasn't she Betty Rubble? Was she Betty Rubble?
She might have been.
I think she was Betty Rubble on the Flintstones.
There's an interview with her. It's about 30 minutes long, and it is on this site. It's called Wait, I Know This. And the call ID number is 33219, and it's episode 23, and it's June Foray. It's a real good interview. I listened to it. It's about 30 minutes
long.
What
show is it?
It's called Wait, I Know This.
I saw that advertised a few times. When you said Wait, I Know This, I thought you were trying to think what it was. Okay. All right, yeah. Hey, Louie, what do you think?
Robert's not going to give us his review? Or is he going to go
Robert, you want
well,
to...
Well, we pretty much discussed what we talked about, towards the end I said in my review, it reminded me of Child's Play, reminded me of the Puppet Master franchise, also reminded me of a movie called Dolls with a witch toy maker turning people into dolls. So there's, kind of sets up for future movie franchises down the road, so... And I pretty much gave it a 5 out of 5. Well, yes, Toy Story as well.
Yeah, Toy Story. I mean, Toy Story is about nice dolls, but if you remember at the end of that film, Woody kind of warns the bad kid to treat his toys with better respect in the future.
We're always watching.
Well, Robert, what did you give it?
I give it 5 out of 5.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Most of us
I wasn't trying to... jump over to you.
No.
We were doing so much talking in the beginning that I just thought that you had pretty much had said all that you were going to say about it. So I apologize for that.
Well, the main points were taken is what we were discussing with you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I pretty much generally talked about what, you know, I wanted to talk about. I mean,
yeah.
We knew that she was kind of put in a situation talking Tina where the family was either going to be abused or there was going to be a death in the family. Mine and killed her and the you know, if it went dark. And it's just like putting oil on a fire when, you know, you started talking Tina in there. So.
Right, exactly.
But Lou, what's up? What you got?
Okay, well, you know, I basically agree with everyone's. All the points have been said already. I guess I'll share a quick experience. If I think I posted on the forums, but you know, I get the feeling that I'm the youngest person in this group. I mean, I've never seen Twilight Zone first run. I saw it like when I first remember seeing Living Doll. I think I was about. It must have been the early '80s. I might have been around 10 years old. And at that time, when Twilight Zone aired, I think it was in syndication. I think I remember watching Talking Tina at 1 in the morning because it would come on Channel 11, WPIX. You know, that would be kind of like the thing I would watch if I stayed up late. It was like Channel 11 all the way. They had like Odd Couple, Honeymoon, Star Trek. And then Twilight Zone would come on at 1 in the morning. And I think they showed two episodes back to back. I remember watching Talking Tina for the first time, or The Living Doll for the first time, early in the morning. And I don't know why I stayed up. Maybe it was a summer or Saturday or something. And I just remember watching this episode. And, you know, this is why it's a great episode. It just, it kind of grabs you. You start wondering. You talk about that. My name is Talking Tina. You're wondering what's going to come out of its mouth next. It's always like the setup and then the pitch. So, you know, watching this episode, I remember watching it. Getting slowly and slowly, I don't want to say terrified, but, you know, I was 10 years old. I was a kid. I don't know what was going on. I was getting more and more scared, you know, and I realized he's doing everything he can to stop this doll, and he can't. It says he's going to kill her. He's apologizing. It doesn't matter. It's going to kill her. You know, and as any adult or any person watches TV, you know, it's like 1:25. You know the episode's coming to an end. So we get to the part where Telly Savalas is in bed, and he hears the sound. And then he's starting to get up to investigate, and I remember turning off the TV. And I kind of rationalized it to myself. He said, you know, you don't want to have nightmares for the rest of the night. You don't want to know what happened.
I would imagine a kid would be scared by that the first time they see it.
You know, it's the only other, you know, I think I can remember one other time where I turned off the TV, and it was when I was watching The Godfather, and I was kind of young then, and I was kind of enjoying it, and then they got to the horse's head scene, and I turned off the TV again because I was like, oh, this is just getting too intense. I can't imagine where they're going to go from here. It's only been like, it's been less than an hour in and they've already cut a horse's head off. I remember turning off The Godfather. And I was young. I might have been a teenager maybe. I don't remember. But I just remember turning off the television when I was watching it. And that horse's head just got me. I mean, you know, violence to any animal always gets me. So, but that just.
Me too. I mean, it absolutely devastates me. I cannot.
Oh, come on, it was the stuffed head. Don't worry.
I know. You know, it still freaked me out. For me, it was kind of like they had crossed this line. How far are they going to go with the rest of this movie?
I
saw the movie later on. It wasn't as bad. Even when I finally did see the end of Living Doll, I was like, oh, well, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But
well,
still,
Lou, first you were afraid, then you were petrified, but then you survived.
But you know what? It's a, you know, just because it kind of hooks you in with that kind of, I mean, that's what I think good horror does. It kind of, it's about suspense. It just slowly builds suspense and it slowly draws you in. You wonder what's going to happen next. Where is this going? And, with the best horror, it kind of just, it builds up that level of, I guess, frighten you and, you know, and you're just concerned what's going to happen. I mean, you know, I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I thought it might've happened, you know, maybe talking to him that had like teeth or something or a knife when you open the door or something. I just didn't want to know then. Like I said, and I agree with the subtle ending that the episode has. It's actually a better ending for him to just have tripped over the doll. But, you know, so I give it 5 out of 5. You know, and as I'm older now, I'm a little more sympathetic towards Telly Savalas. I mean, I'm a dad and I have kids and I get into the same arguments with my wife about toys she buys for her kids. I'm like, how much did that cost? You know, what our budget's like, you know. I mean, admittedly, they played Telly Savalas a lot meaner, and I think there's this whole, they do kind of try to explain it. He's kind of a stepfather. He's come in. They can't have kids.
And, yeah, and, you know, I said the same thing. I mean, I know he was a little bit of a, he could be a little bit of a creep, and he could be a grouch and this and that. But, you know, okay, he was mad because she got the doll. But is that any reason for the doll to say, I hate you, I'm going to kill you? I mean, he threw her across the room, all right? You know, I mean,
you know,
he really freaked out.
It's kind of a switch. He's really mean at the beginning, and she's not so mean. Doesn't she kind of, like, warn him, like, you know, she says, I'm starting not to like you, kind of like, you know.
Yeah, she says, I don't think I like you.
Yeah, she's, you know, she starts, you know, she's kind of like, hey, take it easy.
She's giving Eric chances.
And immediately he gets upset with the family. This is a joke. This is a trick.
But he did put a cigarette out on her nose.
Well, that's the thing. He really goes far.
Yeah.
He's going to destroy this doll. It does become a sense of survival for the doll. I mean, you know, I agree that this doll is trying to maybe, you know, I say it's a doll's life in reference to it's a boy's life. I think there is that kind of power struggle going on there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I do believe it's a threat at the end. I think she says it not only so that the doll now talks to her. Because at that time, it's kind of like he's just, the doll only speaks to Tully Savalas in these mean phrases. Nobody else believes him. You're losing it. What are you doing? You're frightening us. And then, of course, when the doll talks to the wife, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess he was right. So I do believe it was kind
of
a threat.
Don't ever doubt me, yeah?
But you know what? It's a great episode. It's great the way it ends with that kind of like what's going to happen next. It's a little bit like it's a boy's life. And I mean, it's a really good episode. It evoked emotion from me, fright and suspense and all that. And for that reason alone, like I said, it's like one of two shows or, you know, this is one television show. And I remember watching The Godfather on TV where I turned it off. Usually I don't turn off the TV if I'm watching something. But when I was younger, I remember that happened to me twice. And this was one of those two times. So just for the fact that it evoked that kind of response.
Yeah.
It gets a 5 out of 5 from me.
All right, cool. So anybody else? Ken?
Yes. Well, it goes into this kind of primal fear of dolls and clowns. I think underlies everyone's life, perhaps.
Not as bad as it, though. But.
Well, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the fascination, like with the evil doll leading with Chucky and going, I think, as far as you can with Richard Matheson's Zuni doll, Zuni fetish doll that he did in Trilogy of Terror.
With Karen Black, yeah.
Yeah. What is so interesting about this is that the way I view it, instead of the doll, the horror of the whole thing, is that the doll is the threat, not a protector. And I don't see the doll ever as a protector of the family because, you know, what is said at the end, and I thought that was very perceptive, it's a doll's life. The words were amiable in the beginning because maybe that's something that was the initial programming. But the real underlying survival mode of the doll, you know, comes into being. Tully Savalas, again, and I agree with this. I mean, it is his episode, Lock, Stock, and Barrel. He owns it.
Yeah.
He's not a horrible, horrible human being, or as we see, a terrible, terrible father. They're having problems. It probably could be worked out. He shows that he can relent. Maybe she has some blinders on, but he might have all these good qualities too. She's not terribly frightened of him.
They could have money problems.
Yeah,
you know,
money
maybe,
problems,
maybe.
And it's also, you know, he's, you know, this is a kid he doesn't know. This is not his own family.
Right.
He's
mm-hmm.
feeling bad that they can't have children. He has impotency issues, you know.
And he has to all of a sudden love a child that's not his
that's
own.
That's another man's child. And he's feeling, okay, he's got a swagger and use machismo and be the man because he's feeling impotent. Because unfortunately, in physiology, he is. You know, he can't have a kid. He's shooting blanks, to be very blunt. And that's leading to some issues in his anger. So this could have been worked out. And there's this other variable. It's like the nosy neighbor spreading the rumors in the midst of this whole family situation, pouring gasoline on the fire.
Too bad, Eric, you're half a man, face it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, well, there's this other woman, bum bum, could be a great aunt, could be her her mother symbolizing, saying, oh, I don't like you. Look, you know, and I'm going to kill you. So all in all, beyond being the new husband, now he has the threat. So he's got to be territorial and step up.
I think you never know who this entity is. You don't know who is talking.
Yeah.
Who is talking Tina? Who is she supposed to be?
Yeah, and it's written in such a way of keeping the mystery, which I think leads it to be great. It's not as simple. I mean, if he was abusive to the wife, to Annabelle, then the doll would be a protector. If he was ignoring the daughter or there was hurt there, then the doll would come in to be like, you know, maybe it would be something like, you know, saving their lives, you know, like, and coming between them. You know, it could have been written that way. And that would have been like, oh, what a blessing. You know, what saved them? He was going to kill them all. No, the doll was there. You know, it could be, you know, some O. Henry type of mystery. But it wasn't written like that.
Right.
And that's where the whole horror of it. And I think the crux is that last line when the reveal is given to Annabelle. Oh, by the way, your dead husband messed with me, and we're on good terms now. You better toe the line. And the thing is so weird, too, that's a little historical aside. Tina is based on Chatty Cathy, who is also voiced by June Foray.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit of brilliance, of course, that they did with this. I'd give the episode 4.5 stars. 5+ for Telly Savalas. My favorites, I think, get into the emotional political Twilight Zones. Obsolete Man and Monsters Due on Maple Street. I think those are, like, in my heart, the ones I really, really go over the top with me.
Time Enough my at Last. Time Enough at Last.
Yes, that too. Mm-hmm. But this one goes there with like the Agnes Moorehead one, where you have like singular performances that stand out. This episode, I'll repeat what was said earlier. This episode would be nothing without Telly Savalas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without him, and you, I feel sorry for him there at the end. I feel sorry for him because there's underneath it all. Just this kind of modern male 1960s angst, Cold War frustration going on and not being able, you know, dealing with emotions.
I agree. I didn't think he deserved to die.
No.
You know what? It's a mix, isn't it? It's kind of like he didn't deserve to die, but you know what? He had it coming. It's that weird double feeling, I think.
He needed a good beat down.
Yeah.
He needed to be bitch slapped. But he didn't need to die.
But see, that would have required too much work on the doll's part, I think. You know, it's like sometimes if you cross a line, you have to pay the price, right? And unfortunately, it seemed like Telly Savalas went, you know, trying to cut off her head and use a vice, you know.
Yeah, well.
These are not easy things to forgive, I don't think, if it were like a real person.
Throw her across the room. I mean, come on.
I can with bricks on top. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know, with bricks on
top.
She's
a great escape artist. But you notice, did she still stay in that trash can when he went back together, or was she gone?
She came out, remember? She was back in bed with Christy.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no one got her own. She actually came out on her own.
Said, and that's when she said, my name is Talking Tina, and I don't forgive you. Remember that? Yeah.
It's just a great buildup.
And Felix is here. He came in a little late, but hi, Felix. Yay. And he'd give the episode a 3.
3?
3?
Yeah, 3.
that's the ball
Felix,
game.
Felix is in New Jersey. Gives us a 3. Oh, well. Maybe he's drinking. Are you drinking tonight, Felix?
Maybe he had a fear of dolls or I don't know. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. Let me ask you and all of you guys this. What did you think after she dropped the doll? Didn't you think that was like a big mistake on her part at the very end? Like, oh, no, you don't drop that doll.
Oh, you mean when she
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you better be nice to me. And then she dropped him. I'm like, oh, great. That's not a great first way to start.
Well, she was in shock that it actually talked. You're going to hold something that you've been told by some nut that
I probably would have dropped it too. Yeah, you're right.
But
I
Tina's going, I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, I probably would have dropped it too. Felix says he's not fond of it. He thought Telly was good. Oh, but he thought the episode was poor. Oh, well. Oh, that's okay, Felix. You're entitled to that.
Even if you are wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. You're completely entitled to your wrong opinion.
Absolutely. But three is a good. So three is a good episode.
And be careful that Tina doesn't visit you.
Yes. Though I hope Tina didn't hear you say that, Felix. but that's, yeah, that's
Remember that commercial, you might get a clown on your front door? Remember that thing for the postal service they did where there's a knock on the door and they open it and there's a clown?
Oh, my God, yeah. That's an old one, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, well. Okay, well, we have given this episode everything from 3 to 5, and that's pretty good. That is pretty damn good.
Our next episode
will be May 24th, Saturday, May 24th. And what is that episode we're going to be doing?
The Old Man in the Cave.
Old Man, thank you, Bobby. Mm. Old Man in the Cave. Yes, starring James Whitmore, correct? No, not James Whitmore.
James Coburn,
James
Flint
Coburn
himself.
And John Anderson. Yeah. Yes, thank you. James Coburn and John Anderson, who, of course, is a makes pretty regular appearances on Twilight Zone. I think John Anderson has been about 4 or 5 episodes, so he's pretty regular, and I like him very much. So that will
be... James Coburn. I liked a lot of the stuff he
was
in.
Oh, I like him, too.
He was in Looker with Susan Day and Albert Finney, and he was in the Armand Flynn movies, which... were the ones I like. He was kind of like the Matt Helm.
Oh, yeah. Matt Helm of that time, yeah. No, I like him very much. And, he will be starring along with John Anderson in, what is it? Old Man in the Cave. Oh, my God. What is with me tonight? Oh, I want to mention one thing. Mary LaRoche, who was in this episode. She was also in, I think it was episode 3. Yeah, the last episode of season 2 or 3, A World of His Own. The one where, season 1, I'm sorry. Last episode of season 1, A World of His Own. The one where Rod Serling shows up at the very end and actually becomes a part of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love.
Thinking she's the mistress for him too.
Yeah. He makes her up through the. He talks. He describes her into the tape recorder, and she appears. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a great episode.
I gave that episode a five, and I'll tell you, I gave it a 5, only because I liked it, but I gave it a 5 because it is the only episode of the entire series where Rod Serling shows up and actually becomes a part of the episode at the end. I mean, he doesn't just stand there and do the narration. He becomes a part of the episode. And I thought that was awesome, and I gave it a 5 for that. So sue me. So anyway, we are going to be doing Old Man in the Cave. See, I got it right this time. Starring James Coburn and John Anderson on the 24th. So I hope I'll see everybody there. Ken, I hope you come back.
Love to.
Oh, I would love to have you back. Everybody, I want everybody back. I want Felix, and I want Rick, and I want Louie, and I want everybody here. And if you're not, my name is Talkie Lynn. And if you don't show up for the next show, I won't like you.
Make sure you voice capture that, Robert, and send it to Dave.
Ooh, Dave wasn't here. That's right. My name is Talkie Lynn, Dave. And if you don't show up for the next show, I'm going to hate you. No, I won't. I would never hate Dave. Oh, I love Dave. I love all you guys. All right, so I will see all of you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right.
Big.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Good night.
You too.
Good night, Gracie. See you next time.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, George.